All right. Well, I've struggled this week with a spot in my back that hurts, and it's hurting right now. So pray for me as we make it through the message here this morning. I think these are some important truths that we're going to be discussing. So I'm going to just take a seat here for a while anyway, get some relief on that. But, you know, when we think of our church and ministry, our own lives, I don't know about you, but my desire is to have an impact on the world around me, to make a difference for Christ, not because of who I am or any gifts, skills, or abilities that I may have, and I'm sure many of you, if not most of you, are the same way, that you want to have purpose in life. What is your purpose? And I think we would all like to say that we made some kind of a difference in the world around us. And I think in order to have an impact on our culture, it must be evident that Jesus is the one who makes the difference, that we are his child, we are in his hands, and he is at work in and through us to accomplish his work and his will. And I think one of the ways in which our world, our culture, our community can see that we are genuine, that our faith is real, is how we care for one another. Take your Bibles, turn to 1 Timothy chapter 4. 1 Timothy chapter 4. And in that chapter, we learned that we are servants. We walked through that passage. Paul was instructing Timothy on the matter of ministry. And when we think of ministry, we think of the fact that we are servants, that we serve one another. And when we serve one another, we gain purpose in life as opposed to living for ourselves. A couple weeks ago, Pastor Nate spoke on chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. He pointed out that healthy churches produce healthy Christians. How true that is. A healthy church produces healthy Christians. And healthy Christians care for one another by speaking into each other's lives through humble encouragement. He also noted that there ought to be great diversity in the church, different ages, younger as well as older folks, male and female, in an environment of moral purity. There shouldn't be any taint. There shouldn't be any question about our relationships with one another as we encourage one another and to do so with moral purity. This next section, Paul builds on that thought by providing instruction for a specific demographic in the church, and it's that of widows. So follow as I read, get the full context of this, then we're going to come back to important aspects of this matter of caring for widows. 1 Timothy chapter 3, chapter 5, verses 3 down through 16. Follow as I read. Honor widows who are truly widows. But if a widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to show godliness to their own household and to make some return to their parents. For this is pleasing in the sight of God. She who is truly a widow, left all alone, has her hope set on God and continues in supplications and prayers night and day. But she who is self-indulgent is dead even while she lives. Command these things as well, so that they may be without reproach. But if anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for his members of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Let a widow be enrolled if she is not less than 60 years of age, having been the wife of one husband, having a reputation for good works, if she has brought up children, has shown hospitality, has washed the feet of the saints, has cared for the afflicted, and has devoted herself to every good work, but refuse to enroll younger widows. For when their passions draw them away from Christ, they desire to marry and so incur condemnation for having abandoned their former faith. Besides that, they learn to be idlers, going about from house to house, and not only idlers, but also gossips and busybodies, saying what they should not. So I would have younger widows marry, bear children, manage their households, and give the adversary no occasion for slander, for some have already strayed after Satan. If any believing woman has relatives who are widows, let her care for them. Let the church not be burdened, so that it may care for those who are truly widows. I was talking with Teresa just yesterday about this very message, and I thought, how can I make a message on widows compelling to the congregation? But let me tell you that we have no less than 27 widows in our congregation and 4 widowers. That's about 15% of our demographic. So it's a significant group of folks to whom we minister and are a part of our congregation. So here's your take-home thought today, and that is care for widows out of love for God. Care for widows in the church out of your love for God. Your love for God should motivate you in your ministry as you serve one another. I think of John 15:13, where Jesus says, I have given you an example that you should do as I have done for you. The context of his example there is he washed the disciples' feet. He who is the creator of the universe, the creator of the disciples, was willing to stoop to wash their feet, to serve them in that significant way. He set that example. He set that example when it comes to the matter of salvation. As we think of John 3:16, God so loved the world that he gave. He gave of himself. Again, thinking of Memorial Day. Greater love has no one than this, than a man lay down his life for his friends. That's what Jesus did. He has set an example of setting self aside so as to serve and minister to the needs of others. He did that in providing for his great salvation for you, if you would just believe. And I just encourage you, if you're here this morning, you've never trusted Christ, that this would be the day of your salvation. Listening to, thinking about the example that you have in Jesus, who willingly laid down his life to provide freedom. Our military folks have laid down their lives, many of them, so that we could have the freedoms that we share. Jesus laid down his life that you could have freedom in him throughout all eternity. And so, again, think about your relationship with God, because as we think about this very practical matter of caring for widows, we could think of government agencies, local agencies that do this kind of thing, that care for people in need. But in this context, we need to show that Jesus makes a difference. He is the one who is the motivation behind, and his love for us as well as our love for him is the motivation behind caring for those who have need. So caring for others is ministry. Caring for widows is an aspect of ministry. I think of James 1:27. Religion that is pure and undefiled before God. We're talking about making a difference to the world around us. Very simply, he says, is this: to visit orphans and widows in their affliction and keep oneself unstained from the world. The word visit means to identify and to relieve them, to provide relief for them. It's pretty simple. If you want to make a difference, he says, here's a very significant way in which you can make a difference to the world around you. Not just care for others, but care for widows. It's an astounding thought. Go back to the Old Testament. Exodus chapter 22, verses 22 to 24. If you're taking notes, you can jot that down and check me out later. It says, Exodus 22, 22, you shall not mistreat any widow or fatherless child. If you do mistreat them and they cry out to me, God, I will surely hear their cry and my wrath will burn and I will kill you with the sword and your wives shall become widows and your children fatherless. I think God thinks that caring for widows is pretty important. Isaiah 1:17. Learn to do good, seek justice, correct oppression, bring justice to the fatherless, plead the widow's case. God loves the widow. Psalm 68, verse 5 says, Father of the fatherless and protector of widows is God in his holy habitation. Protector of widows. Much the way God protects widows is through the serving and ministering of God's people, his church. Psalm 146, verse 9, the Lord watches over the sojourners. He upholds the widow and the fatherless, but the way of the wicked will bring he brings to ruin. He cares for widows. You think of the implications of becoming a widow. First of all, there's loss. When one is widowed or a widower, there's loss of a companion, of a spouse. And in that loss, there's a possible sense of insecurity or financial insecurity. It has a probable financial impact. There's the possibility of younger widows of a loss of a father in the home or caring for children without a father. And if they're older widows, then they've lost a lifelong companion. There's grief. There's emotional loss. There's questions. How many widows, and I'm not asking for a raise of hand, but I think many widows would love to have at least 20 minutes, if not an hour more time, to talk with their husbands about the arrangements that need to be made concerning their continuing on. And by the way, men, husbands, take time to plan for that, to make sure that if or when you are gone, that your spouse is cared for, and explain how that is they are to be cared for, even if or when you are gone. And there have been a few times where I've taken some extended trips away from Teresa, and I've sat down, I've gone through, here are our accounts, and here are the account numbers, and here are the balances, and here's are some things that you need to consider if something should happen to me. We're probably due to have that conversation again. Just periodically go through that so that your spouse knows how they're cared for if or when you should pass. There's also the grief, just the fact of emotional loss, the questions, the loneliness. Oftentimes, widows are secluded or become secluded or excluded. My encouragement, now I want to speak to widows. My encouragement is don't become secluded. Force yourself to have fellowship with others. Get involved in the lives of others. I have not been through it, but I could just imagine the temptation it would be to pull back. When in fact, what you need is fellowship. You need encouragement. Get involved in church attendance. Stay involved with church attendance. Get involved with Bible studies, life groups. Go out to eat with friends. We have in your worship folder, on the back of the worship folder, we have the Marion's Pizza Luncheon for widows, widowers, and singles. Make it a point to make it out to those kinds of things so that you maintain connection. So often when we run through difficulties and trials, we pull back from church. We pull back from reading the Bible. We pull back from prayer. And I had an individual I listened to just recently said, doing that is like a person on fire running away from the swimming pool. We need that encouragement. We need that refreshment. And so I just encourage you with that. I know there has to be adjustments that that are made during that time, and we need to understand that. I came across some statistics regarding widows this week. Statistics show that widowhood significantly impacts women's financial well-being and social support networks. In the United States, approximately 45% of women become widowed by the age of 65. 45%. Any guess as to what the average age of widowhood is in the United States? Just think about that. Think, come up with a number. Most of us would think probably 70 or older. I asked Teresa, what do you think? She said probably 70. The average age of widowhood in the United States is 59. About 700,000 women in the United States become widowed every year. 700,000. And I fear that we have depended upon government agencies, social agencies, to such an extent that as a church, we maybe have stepped aside from at least doing what we can do to help widows in their time of need. So we need to hear this message. What an awesome way for us to show that our faith makes a difference. So often, God's means of caring for his own is through his people. I think of the first deacons. Think of Acts chapter 6, remember that? What was the issue that prompted the selection of deacons? Widows who were being neglected, right? That's how the deaconhood started, is to care. Choose from among you seven men who were spiritual and who had a heart for people in order to minister to the widows. And I think it was a church of several thousand, okay? So those seven men probably managed the servant pool, so to speak, to care for the widows. It was an important task. And so they enlisted others' help, and as we're going to see in this text, they probably enlisted the help of other women to do this. So we're going to look at some instruction here this morning concerning caring for widows. And there are different categories. The first category here of widows is the widow with a family. The widow with a family. But if a widow, verse 4, if a widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to show godliness to their own household and to make some return to their parents, for this is pleasing in the sight of God. The widow with the family is not completely alone, as opposed to verse 5. Look at verse 5. It says, she who is truly a widow left all alone. So one category is a family, a widow with a family, and has family to care for her so that the church would not be burdened. The family is the first line of defense in caring for family in need, family members in need, and specifically in this context, widows who are in need. The family needs to step up in order to care for family members so that the church would not be burdened. Because the church is going to have their hands full in caring for those who are truly alone, as we're going to see here in a minute. So it has family to care for. And it's not just one of the big issues is financial concerns. But beyond that, there's other ways to care for widows in the family. Lawn care, yard work, home repair, vehicle maintenance, these kinds of things. And Teresa and I, as many of you have and are, caring for loved ones in need. Up until Christmas, Teresa and I had my mom stay with us. My dad passed away just over 2 years ago, almost 2.5 years ago now. And so mom came and stayed with us 12 over the last 16 months up until this last Christmas. And now she's down in Louisiana, and she's watching, and she's listening to this message even this morning. So everybody wave and say hi, Mom. And but we count that as a privilege to do that. And then since then, over as you know, over the last couple of months, we had Teresa's stepmother stay with us, and she went home to be with the Lord just about 3 weeks ago. And we count it a privilege to have done that. And it's just amazing that as that became what we believe our responsibility as well as privilege, that my eyes were open to so many of you who have done or are doing that very same thing. So we see that happening in the church, and you are to be commended for that. We see that care by the family is commanded. We saw that in verse 4, but also look at verse 7 and 8. Command these things as well, so that they may be without reproach. But if anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for the members of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. That's pretty strong language. And he's talking about broader than just widows there, talking about caring for the family. Again, I believe men take that responsibility to make sure that these things are taken care of for the family, but especially for widows in the family. We do this, of course, care for one another out of gratitude for our parents. Look at verse 4. But if a widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to show godliness to their own household, and to make some return to their parents. For this is pleasing in the sight of God. Around here we talk about a right goal quite often, that your goal must be to please God, whether you're at home in the body or away from it. Dead or alive, live to please God. And right here he tells you one way in which you can please God, and that's care for widows in the family. This is pleasing to God. And why do we do that? One reason is because they cared for you at some time in your life while you were a child. Now it's your turn to care for them. That's what he's saying here. Do what you can do to care for members of your family. Now, this doesn't mean the church doesn't step in and encourage and come alongside and help to any extent. It's just saying that the family is the first line of defense in caring for family. And I think some families need to hear this even here. Family is a primary responsibility. Here's another category. I'm going to call them the wild widow. Verse 6. She who is self-indulgent is dead even while she lives. This is the swinging grandma. She's just out there living her life for herself, right? And the church is not obligated to care for a widow in that situation. In fact, what the church needs to do is probably evangelize her, right? To see her not, to come to Jesus and not live for self. And I think that helps us understand James 1:27. Pure religion that's undefiled is caring for visiting widows. There's no way the church can care for every widow out there, right? But what we do is care for those in our families, and then we're going to look at what are called the recognized widows. This is another category. Recognized widows, which includes younger widows. Recognized widows includes younger widows. Look at verse 11. But refuse to enroll younger widows. Now we're talking about enrolling them to care for them. But refuse to enroll younger widows, for when their passions draw them away from Christ, they desire to marry and incur condemnation for having abandoned their former faith. Now, it's not talking about the loss of salvation. Probably an indication that when they first if they were a younger widow, when they first were widowed, they said, I'm never going to marry again. I'm going to devote all my time and attention to God and the church and the ministry of the church. But then another Mr. Right comes along and they abandon that. That's my understanding of what's going on here. Besides that, verse 13, they learn to be idlers, going about from house to house, and not only idlers, but also gossips and busybodies, prying into other people's business, being nosy, saying what they should not. Now, again, this doesn't say that every young widow that becomes a widow is going to backslide. All it's saying here is that they're tempted to do these kinds of things if they're not careful, okay? So, verse 14, I would have younger widows marry, bear children, manage their households, give the adversary no occasion for slander, for some have already strayed from Satan. The younger widows are less than 60 years old. They're not enrolled on the widows in need for regular support. Because of their youth, the church encourages them to marry, but to marry in the faith. And again, we're not pushing a younger widow to do that, but we're just saying, hey, here's something you might consider and provide maybe some direction to that end. That they're cautioned not to marry outside the faith. Marry a believer. Otherwise, again, they might be tempted to be entitled and to be idle and dependent. So that's younger widows. Now, what about enrolled widows? Let's look at enrolled widows. These widows are enrolled to be cared for by the church. They're described in verses 5 as well as verses 9 and 10. Look at verse 5. She who is truly a widow, left all alone, has her hope set on God, has set her hope on God, and continues in supplications and prayers night and day. This is a widow who is completely alone, without a husband, without family to provide. Literally, she has suffered loss and has been left alone. Completely alone. She's a Christian. She has her hopes, set her hope on God, and she's godly. She is in prayer and piety. So the enrolled widow is described in that way. So the question is, how to care for the genuine widow? Verse 3, honor them. Honor them. We talked about honoring mothers just last week, 2 weeks ago. Honor them. Hold them in high esteem so as to care for them. They are to be recognized. In other words, identify them as such and care for them. Again, James 1:27. James 1:27 is one of those verses that if we're not careful, we could say, really? That's true religion and undefiled? Really? Is caring for widows and orphans? Yeah. You know, that's what we need to do. We need to be about this. So we recognize them, we identify them so as to care for them. Now the question, who is enrolled? Look at verses 9 and 10. Let a widow be enrolled if she is not less than 60 years of age, having been the wife of one husband. This is the same thought as when you talk about qualifications of pastors and deacons, a one-woman kind of man. This is a one-man kind of woman. Doesn't mean that she, if she was married and at 27 and her husband died when she was 30, and then marries again, that she can't be put on the list if she's widowed later on. It's one man at a time, okay? So the point there is she's faithful. Verse 10, and having a reputation for good works, if she has brought up children, has shown hospitality, has washed the feet of the saints, has cared for the afflicted, and has devoted herself to every good work. So she's over 60, and she has a good testimony. Over 60, has a good testimony. Faithful to her husband. She's been faithful. She's been faithful to her family, faithful to the church family, faithful to the community. Now, how are they cared for? How are they cared for? Verse 3, honor widows who are truly widows. Recognized and identified. Put on the list if they're over 60. Verse 16, and if any believing woman has relatives who are widows, let her care for them. Let the church not be burdened, so that it may care for those who are truly widows. So those who are enrolled may experience some financial help and or practical help. Financial and practical help. Keep our eyes open to this. When we have our pastors and deacons meetings, we sit down and we say, are there one of the first things after going through the preliminaries and all, we say, are there any known needs? And that would include needs of any widows. Are there anyone being neglected to where we need to step up and step in and help? The other interesting aspect of this is women helping women. Women helping women. It's one thing to have deacons or those that the deacons have enlisted to go mow a lawn, fix the gutters, maybe make sure the car's running well. But women helping women is appropriate in this case to give that emotional support, to maybe help around the house and these kinds of things. So women in the church are to take the major responsibility for caring for genuine widows in need. And I so appreciate we have ladies in our church who have done this, are doing this actively. It's so exciting for me to preach, not as a, we need to get this done, but we're doing it, folks. And I think of Janet Para. She coordinates our shut-in ministry to make sure that those who are shut in, those who are physically restricted, limited in some way, that we have folks that visit them and care for them, and that includes widows as well. And then we also have Carolyn Shaughnessy and the ladies ministry that they've taken. Carolyn, I don't know if this is the verse that you're using, but they've taken this passage of scripture and put it into practice. Women helping women and caring for women in the church. And I'll tell you what, that makes a pastor's buttons pop, because, you know, I know that this is happening. Now, perfectly, probably not. We all need to grow, right? So this is an area where we continue to grow, but I'm so excited to be able to preach this passage from the side of the fact that we are doing this to a great extent. So we rejoice in this. Make a concerted effort to care for the widows. And again, providing for various needs, and they also have the meeting once a month at Marion's Pizza. They give gift bags and those kinds of things to care for widows and shut-ins. Then you see the church helping those widows who are really in need. And that's one reason why we have a deacon fund. And I encourage you to consider contributing to the deacon fund on occasion, as you're able to. We encourage that above and beyond your regular giving. Our deacon fund is how we care in specific and sometimes significant financial ways to those in need, and that's one way in which we're able to help even widows in the church. Again, caring for widows is a family responsibility for the physical family, but also for the church family. We should care for one another. 1 Timothy 5:7 says, command these things well, so that they may be without reproach. How tragic it would be for our culture, our community, to point at First Baptist Church and say, you guys are dropping the ball. No, how much better to say, wow, praise God. Look at that church. They really care for one another. And one way they care for one another is by caring for widows. And the fact of the matter is, we are a family, right? And we think of church, and some of you have family members that are scattered all around the world, if not all around the United States, if not all around the world. And yet you have a church family here. And the privilege of caring for one another is that which shows that Jesus makes a difference. And I trust you take this to heart as a very practical way in which we can show that Christ makes a difference. Let's ask for his help to do that. Heavenly Father, thank you for our time together this morning. Thank you for these very practical instructions that we've received out of 1 Timothy. The title of our series here is Functioning as God's Kind of Church. And so may we think of the caring for one another in these practical ways as a means to the end of being the kind of church that you desire. And so work in our hearts, draw us unto yourself. And with heads bowed and eyes closed, again, I remind you that it's not just doing this apart from Christ, but doing this, caring for one another, caring for widows, caring for orphans, because of Christ. That because Jesus has made a difference in our own hearts and lives, and because of that, then we want to reach out and care for others and allow God to serve others through us. And that we would do that to his glory out of our love for him as well as love for one another.